I'm just a normal guy. Well, I guess I wouldn't say normal. I'm normal now. I work several jobs, and I had an awesome committee for Akron Say No to Dope. I have 4 years sobriety, October 10th. So a little over 4 years. And it's been an amazing journey. It really has.
Let's go back to the beginning. 4 years ago. When did you become an addict?
Probably around 10 years old.
10 years old?
Yeah.
What happened? Tell me your story.
Well, I was raised a block from Summit County Jail. And my parents both sold drugs. And that's all I ever knew. That's was the fast money, the fast life. And I watched all the drug dealers. They had nice cars, they had nice clothes, they had nice jewelry. And you know, I don't really like to glorify drugs anymore, and brag or anything, but I did fairly well selling drugs. And I don't have anything to show for it anymore other than a new life, a new way of life that I'm very proud of. So, you know, I stay busy, and that's, it helps me stay sober.
So you began selling drugs?
I did, yes.
Was that like at a young age?
Yes, my mother sold weed, and she had large quantities, and I used to steal her weed and sell it throughout the neighborhood, and then so it just escalated, of course, because, you know, I had, it was free, so I'd just make my packages bigger. And so, and it was always good, so everybody wanted to buy my weed, and then it escalated into other things, you know. I had a pretty rough growing up. And that's not making an excuse for anything, but like I say, when you see all this stuff happening in front of you, especially you see your family, you see people you look up to, because in the ghetto, you don't know any different, you know? I mean, although there were positive people in my life that tried to, they tried to tell me things, and, you know, and they was always like, well, one day you'll realize what I was saying was true. And that happens to me all the time, even still. Like, I'll think back, like, a certain situation will arise, and I'll think back, and I'm like, man, they were so right. And had I listened to them then, I'd probably be a billionaire, you know. Not to say that I wouldn't have everyday problems, but, you know. So, I mean, you know, when a kid sees things, they follow. They're a sponge. You know, they learn that aspect of things, and unfortunately that was me. You know, it's fortunate and unfortunate, because now I can use that experience, that 27 years experience of doing drugs to help other people.
Yeah. So you started using it then?
Yeah, I smoked weed and drank beers, and you know, not proud of it, but it may, like I say, I'm able to help people because of my experiences.
So did it escalate to heroin?
Eventually, yes. Everything. If you had it, I wanted it. I wanted all of it, and I had the money for it. And I would sell drugs and get mine for free, you know, make a little bit of money and call it a day.
So 4 years ago, what happened?
Well, all right, we'll go back to October 10th, 2012. I was living here in Kenmore at 386 Vincent Street, which the houses are no longer there. I had two houses there. I sold drugs, and I was cooking meth and trading it for other drugs. And so I would do newspapers. I had a newspaper route. Several of them in the falls. And so my girlfriend and I, we did that. And so we would go to work at 2 and then come home by like 8 or 9 in the morning and then sleep. And well, sometimes, but, so that particular time I was trying to quit cooking it, selling it, using it. And it had me by the balls. Excuse my language, but it had me. Meth. And meth, everything. Like, we were Percocets, you know. See, I was addicted to heroin in my 30s for probably 2.5 years when the Oxy craze came. I had a girlfriend at the time back then. She worked in a doctor's office, and she stole a medicine pad. And it was already signed. Well, they had a stamp, you know. And so we just write it out, and they didn't follow up with that. You know, there wasn't that big of an urgency with that type of drug at that time to follow through with the doctors. You know, they weren't as focused on that. So I had ladies that would go out and bust the scripts, and we'd split the scripts. And so then it graduated to, well, heroin's cool. So, you know, it's cheaper, and I could trade other drugs like coke, that I sold coke and everything for that, because then people wanted the coke. And so then we started burning it on foil with water and put it on foil and chase a dragon. And you'd take one hit, and you'd get one tear out of your eye, and it rolled out. And it was just such an intense buzz. And then I started mixing meth and heroin together and snorting it, and got really extremely addicted. And a lot of people that have done Oxycontins, I'm sure that most of them have never experienced eating a 160 milligram Oxycontin. It's quite more intense than if you ate 280 oxys or something like that. We went out to dinner with my father, me, my cousin, and my daughter. And this is how sick I was, you know. Just I had gotten a script of the 160s, and I gave my dad one and my cousin one. And we were at Rockne's in the Falls, and we were eating French fries and a burger, and my dad looks at my cousin. He says, "You're green. You look green." And he gets up and goes to the bathroom, and I start laughing, ha, you know. And my dad looks at me, and he goes, "You're green too." And within seconds, I was in the bathroom puking. And I had eaten several 80s at a time, you know, or even snorted an 80 and ate an 80. And so that's the equivalent of 160. But these were so pure. The way the oxys worked is the fresher the bottle, the higher potency. Like, you could do a 10 milligram, and it would feel like a 40 milligram because of the freshness of the pills. So, you know, it was different back then. You knew it was heroin. You know, it wasn't this fentanyl and carfentanil. And that's really what these people, it puts your body to sleep. You just have no chance. And they're doing the same amounts that they would normally do, and it's just killing their body. It makes them go to sleep. It's not about how much they can handle, because they could do the same amount every day, and just that one day, done, gone. And so, you know, I kind of want to talk a little bit about the following of. Well, let's do this. That evening, we had woke up about 8 o'clock. Cooked a meal. My girlfriend baked a pie. I had a friend come over. He brought some Sudafed, and we were gonna cook a little batch just to smoke. And so, all of a sudden, I didn't even get to eat the pie. All of a sudden, the door. I had a camera underneath my front porch, and the only way you could get there is by walking in front of the camera. So I see like six pairs of legs come past my camera, and they knock on the door. And I'll just tell you, I was excited to see the detectives. I was ready to be done. Like, I just, I said, "Please come in. Follow me." I took Detective Crockett. And Captain Simcox, he's captain now, and said, the lab's in here, but I just, and I did this away from my friend and my girlfriend. I said, I don't want you to charge them. This is mine. This is my house. They don't know anything about this. But they charged everybody because my friend was sitting on what they call a blister pack, which is the where you push the pills out. It's what they make, what they ship them in the inside the box, a little blister pack. And so they had to charge him. And since they charged him, they had to charge her because she had clothes there. And so they said that she had to know. But I took all of the blame for everything in the house. So they both got probation. I was in county jail for about 3 months. And I was in there with a bunch of people. And they were we were all in there for the same thing. And, you know, you have cowboys. They want to one-up you. Oh, I have the best stuff. I have the best stuff. And then you get to thinking, like, you're like, man, when we get out, we should get together and make, you know, all this stuff. And I'm sitting in jail on a $500 bond, you know, for 3 months. Well, 2.5 months. $500 bond. And all these people say they love you when you're out and you have what they need. But when you're in there, they were busy at my house selling all my stuff. You know, and you know, I was just so thankful when them police showed up at my house, because I knew that it was over. I didn't have to worry anymore. And I slept the whole first week in jail. I get up and give my meals away, poop meals anyways. It's Aramark. But when I got to Lorraine, I was there for about a month. Yes, Lorraine reception. And so I was there about a month, and I had like two bunkies, and they always had mail. And when you're on count, they slide the mail underneath the door. So you hear, you know, underneath the door. And I never got any mail. And then all of a sudden one day, my bunkie said, hey, you got a JPay. It's like an email that you can get. And they printed it out and slid underneath your door. Well, now they have the kiosks in there and you can go on there and check. But so it was from my daughter through a friend of mine that I've known since I was like 14. She was friends with her daughter and they were discussing me. And she said, well, let's send them an email. And so she did. And it said, Tug, who do you think you are? You know, you haven't been much of a father. And really, she was right, because I really wasn't a father. I was a dad. Anybody can be a dad. It takes a real man to be a father. And so, you know, instantly the junkie in me attacked that and was like, who do you think you're talking to? I'm your dad. You know, I'm your father. And you know, I just laid there and thought about that. And that night I laid there, and the prison yard lights are kind of bright. And so the cells are all dark. And so I just held it up and read it in the light. And I sat there and I cried and I kept attacking it and kept attacking it, trying to fight, you know, knowing that that was real, what she was saying. And so I prayed to God, and I asked him, you know, to please help me learn how to change my feelings, you know, towards resentment. Like, I resented that letter. And so I reread it, and then I was like, you know what? She's 1,000,000% right. Like, what kind of father have I been? I mean, what kind of family member, son, nephew, brother, you know, cousin? I haven't been much of a person, honestly. I put the drugs before everything. You know, a lot of times I used to say, well, I did that because I didn't want any retaliation coming to my family. Because at one point I was down in Florida. I lived in Tampa for 15 years, and I got involved in some high-level stuff down there and was, let's just put it this way, I lived in a one-room efficiency apartment and in a town of 18,500 people, and I knew 20 people, and I was paranoid. I slept with a gun. And so I was an in-between. Like, I was a stop from in between Miami and Tampa, and I had friends that they would go get things and then bring them there and just leave them there and until they needed them. And so, you know, I always made excuses, and that was very dangerous. Like, because I was never wrong. In my active addiction, everybody else had the problem. I didn't. And I run across that every day doing what I do. Like, you know, people will, they'll sit there and they'll say, I don't have a problem. You know, well, really you do. But I'm glad you made the first step and you reached out to me. And then that way we can try and come up with a plan to get you the help you need, you know. But the first part about it is you have to be honest to yourself and everyone around you. And you have to really want it. And my group and I, we do a lot of the investigational work, and we give people suggestions. Our requirements are that the people follow up and do the work that they have to do. I can't go to treatment for you. I can't do the aftercare. I can't be part of your medically assisted treatment. I mean, all I can do is give you suggestions and keep praying for you. And then I always ask every one of them to keep in contact with me. And we have a very good success rate with the Vivitrol shot. That is, I mean, I'll just tell you this. 90% of the people that we've gotten into the medically assisted outpatient treatment here in Akron, if they continue to do what they're supposed to do, because a lot of them drop out, I don't need IOP and I don't need aftercare. And no, you do. You do. You need to follow protocol. That's why they have that in place, is because it's tools that you learn how to cope. You learn how to live drug-free. And it gives you a chance, if you really take everything out of the program that they teach you, you're going to be a success. If you even take 75% of the stuff that they offer and take it seriously, you will be successful. You will stay sober. If you change your people's places and things, stick to your guns, get sober support, which we offer that too. You can call any of us, and if you have a question or if you're having a bad day, we even have pastors that are on board that will talk to people. We actually have them come to us with people. The kid she was talking about, she placed last week. Our pastor brought him here, one of our pastors. And, you know, so it's a community thing. It just can't be one person, and it can't be just one group of people. And there's a lot of other groups around that they're all about self, you know, and we're willing to work with any of them. We're willing to work with anybody. But they have to, it has to be give and take. You know, if we need a favor, I expect that you would help us, you know, like we would help you.
So how did you do it?
How did I do it?
4 years clean. What is the key to
my recovery?
I know you said you had that moment, but then what happened?
Okay, so God bless me. He answered my prayers, you know, and I made a pledge to him that if he saw me through what I had to go through, my ordeal, that I would do the work that was necessary for me to be successful. I went across the street from Lorraine to Grafton Correctional Institution. And the minute I got on the compound, I signed up for everything on the informational board, any programs. I got my GED. I took a year-long machine trades class. I was chairman of AA, chairman of NA. I started my own inmate group. It's called the Grafton Aquatics Program, which still is going on today. We put fish tanks in every block. They have a breeding room, and they have fundraisers in there where you can buy like pizza once a month and burgers, and you can buy onions for your noodles. And lollipops and candy and pastries and pies and cakes. Well, you can, well, it's a fundraiser, and all of the money that they raise goes to the Cleveland Zoological Society. And so, you know, I stayed so busy in there. And when it came, and see, I had a mandatory sentence. I got blessed right from the beginning. It should have been a mandatory 4. By the grace of God, I got it down to 2 because I signed for a 2-year judicial before it was brought to the attention that it was a 4-year mandatory sentence. So right away they had to honor that because I signed it. And so that was one first blessing. And then I was eligible for the 80% judicial release, surprisingly, on a mandatory sentence. Mandatory means you do day for day. So because I stayed so focused and I did all of the things I did in prison, and it benefits the community and it benefits the inmate population, I didn't sit on my rack. That's what my judge said. This man didn't sit on his rack. He said, you tell him what you did. And so I told him all the things that I did in court, because the prosecutor was like, hey, this guy's double dipping the system. He already got 2 years off of his sentence. How are you going to let him go? You know? And he said, this man just is remarkable. He has turned his life completely around. Now let's give him a chance to do that on the streets and see what he can do. And I'm proud to say that my judge, Teodosio, he is an amazing man. He really cares about people. Him and I are friends today. Like, when we go places, for instance, he had his birthday, and he had a little thing at Ohio Brewing Company just recently, and it was a little bit to gain some of the money back that he put into his campaign. It was kind of a fundraiser type thing, and he just walks me around the room. This is my friend Tug Massa, and you know, and so things like that are just, to me, are so important. He was a very good part of the reason why I do what I do today. So not only am I helping people, but he's helping people through me, you know. And so I go and speak in drug court all the time, and you know, I try to stay as involved with the community as I can, but I'm only one person, and I get spread so thin. Like, you just wouldn't, I guarantee people would fold doing the things that I'm doing. I work, I have 3 jobs. I have this, I have Akron Say No to Dope. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot. I place people. People call me personally and ask me, like, when you were doing an interview with Tanya, I had a friend call about another friend that got herself in some trouble, and I told her some places to call to try to get her some help before they bond her out of jail, because I would make that a priority, is getting her into inpatient, you know. So, I mean, it's just, my phone never stops. That's why I had to turn my ringer off. But I'm here to help people, and I just wish that someone like me was around when I was doing what I was doing, because I would have totally listened to me. You know, I'm not. Why?
Why would you listen to you?
Because I'm a straight shooter. I've been through it. I've been through it probably in a lot darker places than most people could even imagine being themselves in. I've seen a lot of things in my life. I've been a part of a lot of things, like, not so good things, kidnappings. You know, I don't want to incriminate myself, or, but it was just the nature of the beast. When you get involved like that, and you have major money on the table, you could face a lot of time in prison. There, you do things that you normally, as a normal human being, wouldn't do, and then you don't think twice about it. A lot of people in this area know about me prior, you know, my dealings before. Some used to call me kind of gangster. I mean, you know, I really didn't have a concept on what life was really all about, you know, until, like, I like to say that I was mentally challenged until I was 37, you know. But I guess we all have to grow up sometime in life, and I guess I was just a late bloomer.
So 4 years so
4 years. Over, a little over four, yeah.
How difficult is it?
A lot of people say, well, you don't count clean time being in prison, which is a crock because there's more drugs in there than there is on the streets. Well, I don't know about now, but they got them in there. And they're in your face constantly. And so it was a struggle because, you have idle time in there. And that's why I tried to occupy my time. And that's very important in sobriety, is keeping yourself busy, keeping yourself connected, doing service work, helping people. It's very vital that you give back. You have to. And another key aspect of sobriety is you have to have your higher power and whatever that is to you. Mine is God. I'm not a Bible thumper. I do go to church, Movement Church on Manchester Road. Amazing group of people. They support our group 1,000%. And like I say, our pastors send us people all the time. We're here just to help anybody. If somebody needs help, reach out. I mean, you have to communicate because people can't just guess. I mean, I can tell when someone's high. I can be like, hey, give that guy a card, you know. So, I mean, it's just amazing to be able to do the things that I'm doing now and to get the community support for a community that I once helped try and tear down. Like, I was a major problem out here. And now I want to be part of the solution, you know. I know one person or one group can't change everything, but we're going to try. We're here. We're not going anywhere, nowhere.
Tug, do you think that there is a solution? I mean, are we going to get there? Can we get all these addicts clean and stay?
We'll never get all of the addicts clean because, like I say, the first part is the willingness and to accept that you do have a problem and to reach out. I mean, you have to reach out. It's sad to say this, but it's only going to get worse before it gets better. You know, it just started and really badly, you know, noticed in July last year, and they're saying it's going to peak this year. And, you know, every so often, it's about every month or every 2 months, we get a batch that is just totally lethal. And you hear, like, one week last month, we lost 8 people that had pretty good amount of clean time. A lot of them were really involved in helping other people. 8 people in a week. They go back out. They go back out for that, just that one time. One of them, it was his birthday. He had, I want to say 20 months sober. He went just one time on his birthday. Talked to his girlfriend. She posted on Facebook, I just talked to you at 1 o'clock. And this was, she posted at 10 o'clock. I can't believe that you're gone. You know, so, it only takes one time to die. It only takes one time. And like I say, they use just a little bit, and that stuff is so lethal. It just puts you to sleep. You just go to sleep.
Do you have urges?
No. I have way too much to lose, and I'm so focused on helping other people. Do I think about drugs? I mean, of course. I'm sure everybody does. You know, that has been doing that, like, and I'm not gonna say that, you know, I had a lot of fun when I did drugs and we partied, and I mean, who doesn't like to have fun, you know? But now I have clean fun, you know. I do things. My biggest thing is, after working hard all day and doing all this, I like to sit on the couch with my fiance and we watch movies and TV and try to catch up on Facebook, because, you know, all day long, I'll just say this, I could probably look on here now and there's probably 20 things on my Facebook, and I just checked it an hour ago, and, it's just trying to organize everything. Like, we have a Hall Gross coming up on February 4th at Main Street Saloon from 4 to 8. I encourage everybody to come out. But we do things like that.
Say that again.
It's a hog roast.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Okay, yeah. So we do things like that to try and raise money. And this is an ongoing fundraiser. We needed to do an ongoing fundraiser, this store, the thrift store, at 932 Kenmore Boulevard. This is going to be so we can get loans so we can purchase, and hopefully maybe someone will step up and give us properties. That's what we're praying for. We wanted to fill the void from detox to treatment. And we're losing so many people in that. You know, detox is a wonderful thing. But if you just go into detox and then you go out right out and get dope, you're going to die. Because your tolerance goes way down. And you're going to try to use the same thing that you've been using. And you're going to go to sleep. And you're never going to wake up. And we don't want that to happen. You know, it's a very sad time. And I can't say it enough. If you call us, we can do what we can do to help you. I mean, we have a pretty good success rate placing people, either in, you know, like I say, outpatient medically assisted treatment, or inpatient. We do what we can, and we don't stop until we get somebody help. Or if you call me, I can give you the information and you can do the work. You know, you can call the place, because it's easy. You know, a lot of times they have to talk to the client themselves, HIPAA laws, you know, so.
This concept of addicts in recovery taking upon themselves to help fix this problem.
It's needed here. You know, like I said, that pledge to God, and I told him that once I was able to help people, that I would help as many people as possible. And that was very important to me. He kept his word to me, not necessarily word, but he helped me through my ordeal. And so that was a deal that I made with him, and he held up his end of the bargain. And so I have to help hold up my end of the bargain and help in any way I can. And like I say, I owe this community so much. And this is all just a start. Like I say, we're around 5 months old. Akron Say No to Dope is that young. So just in that little bit of time, I'd like to say we've helped over 100 people easily, in one way or another. You know, it's a lot of work, but I have some great people around me, and I have a lot of community support. You would be surprised. And I got a lot of things planned, and I come up with new ideas all the time, you know, so we're here to help, you know, and one way or another, any way we can.
Wow. And giving out your phone number. I mean,
and that's my personal phone number. Yeah. That's my cell phone number. We don't make any money here. Everything I do, running my gas, paying the parking garage fees downtown, my cell phone is paid by me. You know, it's just little things like that. You know, that's my way of giving back, my volunteer time. Like, I could be at work, you know. This is my baby. This is our baby. We're a family, and no one's over anybody. This store isn't just mine. This store is everybody who volunteers here. This store is the community store. Just so happens that we run it. We volunteer our time. And I am so blessed with my board members and the volunteers that help us. And everybody in the community that's behind us. It's just so amazing. Like, you have no clue how that feels. And you have no... The payment I get is seeing somebody come out on the other end of treatment and live a good life, you know? I had a girl... Okay, first of all, one family that donates $100 tattoos every week for our organization. And that's Sin on Skin Tattoos at 300 East South Street. Go down and see Dan Cooper. Amazing watercolor tattoos. I'm on the Heroin Help Flyer. I don't know if you've seen them. They're all over the place. Okay. So I'm on there and this girl had been living next to a church, I won't say her name, with some guys in the tent, and she was selling her body. She was holding a sign. She had no skin on her nose. She had scars from where she had surgery from MRSA. She wasn't from here. She was from another state. She had 4 warrants. She knocked on his door, and he was still closed at the tattoo shop. She's like, well, I want to call this girl that's on that list. And he said, no, you'll call my friend that's on the list. We'll get him down here. He'll come right now. I was on a job, and he called, and he said, bro, I need you down here. This girl really needs help. She's in bad shape. Beautiful young girl. I mean, I'll show you a picture of her here in a few. So she wasn't from here, and so we tried to get her insurance number for her personal insurance, and we weren't able to do that. Like, her parents, when they didn't answer the phone, and we tried to call the insurance company, and they couldn't give it to her, and so it was just a runaround. I said, you know what, get in the truck. I took her to City Hospital. I told the nurse at the front desk while she was checking in, I said, she said she was going to kill herself. So then they took her and they put her in the mental health ward. And so then the object was to get her from there to detox, because there was a extreme weight at the time. It was like 2 weeks or something. And so I had another group. They have a ministry, and they do outreach here in the community. And they followed up with the girl, because they had met her like the week before and was trying to get her help and trying to, you know, and she lost her number. Well, so they decided at Pest that they were going to give her a bus ticket to go back to where she's from. And so she went back there and she did a program for 28 days. In the jail, and it took care of her warrants, and they got her into a treatment facility, and she did 60-some days in the treatment facility, and then they placed her in sober living, where she's from. So my birthday is December 20th, and I'd been leaving little messages on her Facebook, like, hey, girl, how you doing, you know. We miss you. Took a picture of me and my buddy Dan, and said, you know, we're thinking about you, you know, several things like that. And on my birthday, I get a messenger, and it's her. And she's like, I'm doing good. I did this. I said, call me, you know, and she's telling me all the stuff she's doing. She had 90 some days sober. And she had just did her 30 days where she couldn't contact anybody. So she said, I got my tablet, and you're the first person I called, and I just want you to know that you have a special place in my heart. And she posted a picture of herself, and just to see how the difference from what I remember in my head, that girl sitting there. And, you know, I had suggested to her, like, well, why don't you get on the Vivitrol shot? And she's like, well, I don't want the shot, this and that. I said, you've been shooting stuff in your arm and selling your butt. I was like, it's time for you to get help. You have got to do something or you're gonna die. She's like, sometimes I just want to die. And I said, why? Life is beautiful. And so I'm glad to say that she's doing very well, and I'm so proud of her. I don't want to say her name, because you know, but she knows who she is. And so it's things like that, or even Kylie, to see the pictures of her before treatment and to see her in person now, it's just like, you're like, you know, it's so amazing. Like, just that, this little things like that, or to see someone thriving, people on Vivitrol or Suboxone and just working a regular job and living a real life. And just seeing that is payment enough to me. I'm so happy just seeing somebody else get clean. And I hope that I am somebody that they can look up to. Like, I want what he's got. You know, not necessarily all of this, because I wouldn't wish this on anybody, because it's a lot. It is a lot. And, you know, I made my board a mixed crowd. We got addicts. We have mothers of addicts. We have aunts of addicts. We have sisters of addicts. We have grandfathers that lost their grandchildren, you know. So we have a mixture. We have people in mental health. We have, you know. And what's really crazy to me is when I get calls from Oriental House workers or other places asking me to talk to some of their clients, because, you know, it's different what you learn in school than actually having a resume, so to speak. 27 years experience. Most people retire in 27 years, you know. So I retired from that and moved on to the other side, you know. Never thought that I could be speaking in the courtroom with the judge and him calling me a friend after he sent me to prison twice, and allowing me to drive his wife's Thunderbird in parades, and allowing me to help in his campaign. And he was very successful. He won by 78%, I believe. So it was a win for me too, you know. I felt like I did a lot of work, and it paid off for him. And, you know, I kept telling him, you're going to win. He's like, don't jinx me. I was like, man, don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about it. People recognize how much you care. He is such a caring individual, you know, and I consider him a mentor. And I have several other mentors too that are in the sobriety community. And to me, it's all about who you surround yourself with. I still have family that I can't talk to on a regular basis. We're friends on Facebook. If I see them out, I give them a hug. Same with friends. You know, and I tell them, you know, anytime you're ready, I'm here. We can get you the help you need, man, but you have to be ready. And until then, you can't expect my time. You know, I ran into one of my cousins at Giant Eagle, and he just looked bad. And, you know, I gave him a hug, and, you know, he's like, I'm proud of what you're doing. And then the next month I see he's in the county jail on charges and stuff, and he's in prison now. He's in the prison that I was in. And I haven't contacted him. I just want him to sweat it out a little bit. He'll be getting out pretty soon, and I'm kind of hoping that we have somewhere for him to go by then. Because I'd like to, you know, start helping people as soon as I can with safe housing. It's important. It really is important.
You mean providing safe housing?
Absolutely. So we're working on it diligently, but it's just, like I said, I got so much going on that it's kind of hard to do. I jump from one little thing, and they save me. These people save me. I'm telling you. These ladies, my group, my board is amazing.
What an amazing thing.
Yeah.
This is such a hopeful story.
It's hard for me to fathom that one guy can do all this in a little under 5 months and have the support that I have. That is payment too. And that's, I will never go back to using drugs. I can't. I mean, life is so beautiful. Not having to look over your shoulder. Not having to chase drugs. Not having to chase a drug dealer. Not having to have your phone blown up by people trying to buy drugs. You have no personal time. I'd rather not have any personal time and help people get out of the situation than, and I make personal time, trust me. But, just to be on this side and help people compared to where I used to be and being selfish is amazing. But I learn something new every day about myself and about life. So, I mean,
Doug, you're an amazing person.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm just a regular guy.
So,
That's my real name, Tug Maso. Mm-hmm. I was named after, you know who Tim McGraw is, the country singer?
Yeah.
I was named after his father. He was a pitcher for the I believe the Mets and the Phillies. He was really good, so.
Okay. Well, what a story.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Are a face of hope.
I hope so. I hope so. I hope so. I hope more people reach out. I really do. And like I say, we're going to put a directory together for my whole group very soon. We have the information. It's just getting my secretary to get on it. She will. She will. And then everybody will be the same. We're all trained in Narcan except for two of us. And we have, yes, we're having, if you'd like to come on the 17th, we have 20 spots. They're gonna do it here, training here at 932 Kenmore Boulevard. Yes. Yeah. I'm not sure what time you'll have to get with them about the time. Yeah, come on out. It's
like a hub of recovery.
This right here is demographically one of the worst hit areas in our community. Kenmore and Barberton, it's bad. That Circle K right across the street. So many overdoses. It's not even funny. It's just, I don't even think they let people use the bathroom over there anymore.
You gotta be pretty proud.
I am extremely proud. Like, I'm about to cry. You know, I am. Like, just to see the way that this whole thing's just taken off, and I just know that we're gonna be able to help more people, just by things like you coming and doing an interview, people donating things, us being able to sell. Sorry, my stomach is going crazy. I'm starving. So if anybody like to make donations, we'll take them. 932 Kenmore Boulevard. We take clothes, books, toys, anything that you would go and buy from a thrift store, we'll take it. So, and that's going to be how we pay for our housing.
And it's
going to
happen.
It's going to happen. We're not going anywhere. We are here to stay. Maybe not at this location, because I can just see us outgrowing this pretty quick. And that's why we only did a year lease. But if not, this will be something to do with us. I'm sure we'll probably just use it as office. Maybe have a storefront of, I don't know. Who knows what we're going to do. But this all came to me in a dream, this thrift store, but it was in a bigger building. And so we'll see what happens.